Yo, what is up, all you slashers and survivor girls? We got another one here for you this week. I am the Good Buddy Lunchbox, ready to kick it back in for you again. I'm excited for this one because this is something that I think a lot of people end up talking about. So again, I'm excited to be doing the same and doing the chitter chatters. But, you know, I did have a pretty damn good weekend at the time of this recording. I ended up, you know, taking the kids out to the beach, hanging out with my sister and my mama. It was a fantastic time. Beautiful, beautiful day. But then it turned out, I guess, in the same, like, kind of area that we were at, there was a goddamn tornado here in Florida. And it was, like, throwing shit around. Like, I had a buddy show me a video. And I was kind of blown away because I was like, man, like, we were there at the beginning of the day and it was just like super nice and bright. I was like, it was a beautiful day. So it was just really bizarre where it was like 1 minute glorious, the second just fucking chaos. So yeah, I'm glad we didn't get any of that. So a little windy, but that was about it. And then on top of that, like then on Sunday, I ended up, going first place in my Pokemon tournament. So I am super pumped about that because I was using a gimmick deck that I built myself and, holy shit, it actually did something. So, you know, good ups on that. Now, this week, to get back into some movie stuff, we are going to be continuing on with It from 1990. This was requested and suggested by my good friend Paula. So again, you guys, I want to hear what movies you guys want me to review. And you know, it's like, I always love, you know, getting some new movie suggestions and things like that. So please send them through email at creepingitreal.cm@gmail.com and or do the /or thing. Go to Instagram and Facebook at Creepin' It Real, and that's R-E-E-L. And again, drop me a DM or, you know, just drop me a comment on one of my you know, other posts there, and just let me know what you guys want to watch. I'm always down for a good suggestion, and I always try to do some type of post or poll or things like that on what I should do next. Just to kind of keep things fresh and moving. So again, awesome. So yeah. So Paula, thank you for recommending this one because I have been wanting to do this both parts for a very long time, and it just hit me too that when Meg was on the show, we actually only did the first part of the remake. So I still got part two to follow up with, so I might actually even do a full-blown retrospective. I might even see if I could, maybe Meg might want to join me on that one, because I always love having, like, a good discussion on that. So I might see if I can, you know, get her to come out of retirement for a day, and just that way we can talk about the book, the movie, the TV series and the movie all in one. So that'll be fun. I think that'd be an interesting little idea. So now, as I mentioned, we are jumping right back into part two of It 1990. So, I mean, we still got our same players. I mean, it's, Tommy Lee Wallace who directed it. It's written by Stephen King, obviously. The screenplay was written by Tommy Lee Wallace and, Lawrence, D. Cohen. And again, we also have Harry Anderson, Dennis Christopher, Richard Mowers, Annette O'Toole, Tim Reed, John Ritter, Richard Thomas, and Tim Curry as our main adults for part two. Now, we're going to be adding on a few extra names here for this list just because they do play a fairly big part into the storyline for the movie. So we have Olivia Hussey as Audra Dembro, and then Michael Cole as the adult Henry Bowers. Now, as we kind of get into this movie, I have found myself to be a little bit on the fence, and it was more of like just because I've seen this, the TV series, so many times. Like I said, on the last episode, I gave the first part of it a 5. Like, I have been just an uber fan of this film, or the TV series, whatever you want to call it. It's basically a film. It's a 3-hour goddamn film. So, I have been a huge fan of it forever. It's actually one of the first movies that really got me into my love for clowns and things like that. Tim Curry is just fucking iconic. Like, he's just a gem. I absolutely love pretty much anything Tim Curry has ever really been in. I mean, he's just got that presence and that demeanor, and just, it's just, he just oozes everything awesome. Like, it's just, it's great. Now, I think that this film kind of follows into what a lot of people did for the remake of It, where going from the kids to the adults and really sticking with them having to deal with it, a lot of people tend to not really find that very interesting. And a little part of me was, for a good few years, was also thinking the same way. But this time around, I actually kind of wanted to think about a little bit more about just the dynamic of what is actually happening with these adults and how they're dealing with this situation with this killer ass clown god thing that's just destroying and eating children. The idea behind it is just so incredible, because it takes 7 kids and puts them into a situation where there is really just no way that they are going to win at all. And then they squeak one by the skin of their teeth and survive. I mean, if anything, like, that is a huge W in my book, for sure. Like, there's no way you can't come out of that sewer going, you know what, man, we did what we needed to do. So when you get into the second part and it turns around where the killings have actually started back up again, and this is kind of like where the 90s film differs from the remake, is because as you're going through this entire 3-hour episode style TV movie, you actually are starting off with Mike calling all of the 7 and them out of nowhere just getting this like punch in the face with this memory, and they automatically have this thing of, okay, I got to get back. I have to drop what I'm doing and go back, because I promised my lifelong friends that I would be there. And so that's where the first part of this movie comes into play, is you get all of the memories of the 6. Stanley, you never really get the full explanation of what he sees. So the main 6, you kind of get a visual of, you know, what they're dealing with. And once you get into part 2, all that kind of drops. Like, you don't get any extra storylines or any of that. It just kind of just gets right into just them dealing with whatever it is. And one of the first people to actually show up is Bill, and he's riding in a cab, and he crosses over the county line, and he ends up seeing, like, he wants to, like, well, you know, he ends up seeing his brother Georgie. So he stops off at the, you know, the local cemetery, and he is like apologizing. He's like, I'm sorry that I forgot. I'm sorry that I have been away. And he's, you know, kind of talking to his brother, and then out of nowhere, he just gets this just uneasy feeling, and he has to turn around. And lo and behold, there are 7 graves, and 6 of them are freshly dug up, and 1 is filled. And then out of nowhere, Pennywise just pops up. And he's he does that whole, is like, how you doing, a Billy boy? It's fucking amazing. But he's just, the whole image of Pennywise just sitting up out of this grave that he's digging and tormenting Bill and just, and scaring the shit out of him. Bill has to try to make himself believe that Pennywise isn't real. And Pennywise is, again, trying to edge that fear. He's trying to tenderize these adults and then get them to basically fuck off. Like, he just does not want them in town, so he's trying to scare them enough so that they all just leave. And there is a great little scene where Bill doesn't understand it fully, but Pennywise says, "Oh, I got a couple of new, you know, homes for you guys. So, you know, if you want to stay, you know, here, you're like, you're more than welcome to stay here. But there's one at the end that's already taken." And Bill doesn't really react to it as you kind of should, because he doesn't understand, like, oh, well, there were seven of us and one's already filled, and it doesn't hit him until much later. Well, then Pennywise, like, he ends up saying, like, oh, I don't believe in you. I don't believe you're real, or what, and, you know, just kind of just blocks out the bad. And then all of a sudden, like, he looks over and Pennywise is gone, which is an interesting little idea, because it's one to say, it's like, well, when I think back to a lot of just supernatural horror movie, you know, icons, like, let's say, Freddy Krueger. Well, when you're in a dream, Freddy can manipulate your dreams and kind of work them to his benefit, right? And he loves to toy and play with his food, basically. So he will sit there and go, okay, well, if you're scared of water, he'll, you know, drown you, or he'll put you in bathtub, or, you know, or swimming pools, or out in the ocean, who knows? Or if you got phobia on spiders or bugs, he'll do some shit like that. It's, he'll just put you in a roach motel. Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite little kill scenes. So stuff like that, where it's Freddy is manipulating dreams, is his, you know, supernatural power. Now with Pennywise, Pennywise is technically a godlike creature. He has been around for eons, feeding and just continuing on with his, you know, just reign of terror, basically, by scaring the shit out of his food and just killing and murdering. I guess they said, like, I mean, Mike kind of gives the example of how every 30 years, which in the remake, they actually point out that it's every 27 years. And the remake actually came out 27 years after this TV series came out. So I thought that was a really nice touch, having that little tidbit in there. But so Mike tells them that it's every 30 years there has been some catastrophic event that has happened in Derry. You know, there was like a bunch of fires, and there was a bunch of like just a lot there. I think there was like a boiler room, you know, travesty, but it's just like there is just chaos every 30 years. And for some reason, like, it always points back to Pennywise. Pennywise is always the cause of it. So the thing that kills me with Pennywise is, like I can't put my finger around it. It was like, is he able to manipulate their thought patterns, or like, how does he actually navigate? Because if he is like just as a thought, or just an apparition, or like a ghost-like figure, where he can just maneuver about the town without being seen, or he can kind of like, maybe he's off in the distance, but he's projecting what, you know, he wants you to think or have, you know, or feel or what have you. I guess like there's a thing where there's like a veil that is lift, like, you know, covering over Derry, where the adults don't tend to see anything they don't see negative, or they tend to look away when bad things happen. There was a scene where Beverly is being harassed by Henry Bowers when she was a girl, and her neighbor walks out and sees them, knows that something's wrong and he should say something, but he just turns away. He just doesn't, he doesn't want to focus on that. And like, so when these kids are just happen to go missing or show up, you know, just completely obliterated and murdered and just, you know, torn apart, the adults don't see it as like, oh, it's just, you know, it's not that big of a deal. And they just kind of move on with their day. It doesn't become a town riot where it's like, holy shit, we got to protect our kids. It's just, okay, it's just, it is what it is. Like, you know, boys will be boys and they'll get scrapes. It'll be fine. It's nothing major. So the thing that, like I was saying was like, when Pennywise decides to mess with Bill and the rest of the group of the Losers Club, he kind of is like, he's either there or putting an image into their head or something that they can physically see that's there. However, nobody else around them has any clue that anything's going on. So it's interesting to see where he can manipulate time and space and reality for that one person. And like, there was that one really, 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 really awesome scene with Richie. So he's freaking out because he just got into town and he's in his Corvette and he's singing and just having a good old time. And then he passes by one of his favorite places, which was the old movie theater. And turns out they're closing it down. Like, I mean, it's just, it's super, super old. They're closing it. No problem. So he's getting all pissed off. He's like, oh my God, it's an iconic spot. It's, you know, it's a landmark. How you monsters, yada, yada, yada. And as he drives just a little bit more past the sign, he looks back and it says Richie Chozier, born 1950, died 1990. And then you hear Pennywise's laugh, right? So that freaks out Richie. So he rushes over to the library to see Mike. Well, Mike and Bill have left. And so that, you know, Bill and them can get cleaned up and for their dinner at the Chinese restaurant later on that night. So Richie runs in freaking out. And the, you know, nice little girl tells him like, oh, like he might be back. So if you just want to have a seat, there it is. So he's like freaking out. He's like looking at magazines, just trying to like calm down. But you could just tell like there was something going on. And so the girl, she like hands him a cup of water, you know, saying, oh, like, I think you just needed this. As she's walking away, you can see Richie like checking her out. And then you hear the voice come from above saying like, oh, like she's a little bit too young for you there, Richie. And then he looks up and it's just this fucking clown reading a newspaper. And he does this whole thing of just like, oh, you should just, you know, you're too old. Just get away. Just leave. And as Richie is just staring at this clown, he's like, oh, like, I think, you know, you'd want a balloon. It's like, oh, you don't want one? Well, then have just a whole bunch. And he, like, you know, throws his arm up, and like all these balloons just start to float down, and they all start popping. And when they pop, it's just this gust of like blood shoots into these people's faces, and then one goes right in front of Richie, pops, and it freaks him out. Where he's like, I can't, he just can't handle it. So he tells the girl, and he's like, please, like, just tell Mike that I'm here, I'll be back, and yeah, like, and as he's doing that, Pennywise is yelling over him all these terrible, bad, like, just kind of like the jokes that you would give, like, on, like, a prank phone call. And it was stuff like, oh, do you have Prince Albert in a can? Well, then you better let him out. And he's just, like, giving, like, this terrible clown laugh. And it's, like, it's messing with Richie so bad because he doesn't want to hear this fucking clown. And it's just, it's too much. But then Pennywise does that, just that evil, just get out. You're too old. You can't stop me. It's like, just leave. Save yourself. Get out. And Richie fucks off. And it's such a great scene just because it sets everything up where it's just, it gives you that feeling that Pennywise really can do just whatever he wants just to mess with them, kind of like what Freddy does, but he's doing this during the day, while they're awake, around people. Like, he could be in a room filled with people, and not one person will see him. And that's something where it's, is he actually there, or is this, like, how is he projecting himself? Is he a part of the town? It's really, really interesting because he does have a physical form, but it's in how it's being projected is my question, because I don't think I've ever really, you know, seen like what he's doing to like I guess give the image of that he's there. In the remake for the original, or like I guess the part one, I should say, they end up doing, like, there's a bunch of scenes with Pennywise, and he show, like, he's there, but it's, Pennywise is physically there. He's projecting the image of, like, you know, or like, for instance, I believe it was one of Henry Bower's friends who goes down in the sewer. You see Pennywise, he kind of presents himself as one of the dead kids. And that smiles, and then the dead kid, you know, kind of rushes at him and stuff like that. But again, it's actually Pennywise there projecting that image onto him. Or if you have, Eddie with the leper, right? So Eddie was walking along and he hears the voice and then turns around and boom, the fucking leper's right in front of him. Well, it's Pennywise. Like, it's physically him, but he's putting on that costume. Again, which is awesome. So that was the thing, was throughout this movie, it was just, it kept eating at me where I'm like, how is Pennywise doing this? Or is he literally just a specter, just being able to, like, float through the air and do all this stuff? And one scene that really was just like, okay, how the fuck are we getting through this shit, was the scene with Henry Bowers. So it turned out that Henry Bowers, as a 14-year-old boy, after they went down into the sewer, with, it was him, Belch, and his other friend, they followed the seven into the sewer, and they were going to, Henry was literally just going to go kill them. He had his pocket knife. He was ready to just go stabbing, because those kids that threw all those rocks at him made him feel stupid. He was ready to just go and straight up start murdering some fools. So, but then that's when, Pennywise shows up with his deadlights, takes, Belch, scares the shit out of Stan, and then literally turns Henry's hair white. Now, after they find Henry, they don't find Belch's body, but they find the other boys who was, like, mutilated. And then they were, I guess, questioning Henry about, you know, what ended up happening. And he was explaining them to, or, you know, to the police about just how there was this really, this extremely bright white light. It made him feel like he didn't want to live anymore. He was just too focused on it. He went down to this, like, so the first part of the story was exactly true. But no one really believed him then, because there was no other kids that was down into the sewer that they saw. But then he ended up confessing to all of the murders of every other kid. And I guess Henry was, they found him, like, covered in blood or anything like that. So it was like, I don't know. It was a little bizarre, but, he ended up confessing to the murders. And so they sent him to an insane asylum. And he's been there ever since. Just lost his mind, all that good shit. Well, after the deadlights, and it turned his hair white, and he was, like, freaking out, he ended up just very, very old-looking. Now, most of these, you know, of the seven, they definitely looked like they aged. I mean, they were probably in their 40s and whatnot. Henry, being 40, he looked like he was probably pushing about maybe 60, maybe 65. He was just very dumpy. I mean, he's been in an asylum his whole life, not you're probably able to really work out or what have you, but he's just been chilling in this asylum. But one night, he's just laying in bed, and all out of nowhere, he hears a voice call to him. And he looks out of the window, looks up at this super large moon that's, like, way too close to be real. And it's just fucking Pennywise. Pennywise's face just shows up right in the moon and says, I need you to, you know, help me. I need you to go and finish the job that you were set out to do. It's like, I need you to go and kill them all. It's like, they deserve to be punished. They hurt you. They, you know, were just terrible. They need to be punished. They need to be killed. And Pennywise actually says, I can't do it alone. I need you to go and take care of them for me. And that was really, really, it actually set a new tone for Pennywise for me on the second go around. Now, I think it was like a few scenes afterwards, you know, Henry is laying back in bed, and out of nowhere, he hears another voice, and he looks out the window, but then out of nowhere, he feels something on the bottom of his bed, and it turns out that it's his friend Belch. And his friend Belch looks like he's just been just soaking in sewer water forever. Like, he's got, you know, blood coming out of him, and he looks like a swamp monster. And, you know, his friend Belch is sitting there telling him, like, you need to go out and kill them. You need to take care of them. And, you know, again, given all the same stuff that Pennywise just said to him. And he ends up handing Henry the knife, saying, like, okay, go ahead, go do your thing. Now, the thing that struck me that was really cool was I felt like that was actually Pennywise physically there, because there was no way that Henry was going to be able to get this knife physically in this environment that he's in. But, yeah, so his Ghost Buddy Belch hands him this knife and then tells him to go ahead, go on. But Henry was worried because he's like, oh, the meanest security guard is there. How am I going to get through this? And Belch is like, don't worry about it. I got you. And so Belch walks behind Henry the whole way up. And as Henry's standing there, the guard comes out and it starts giving Henry a bunch of shit. And then out of nowhere, right from behind him, a fucking clown suit pops out. And the guard starts at the feet and slowly looks up. But then out of nowhere, it's a fucking Rottweiler. It's just a big ass dog just lunges right at him or at this guard and attacks him. And then the guard, like, it's just a slow motion shot. The guard goes down and clearly it's like, that's it. Now we don't know. It's like, did the guard die or did Henry Bowers actually, you know, stab him? Like, what was the extent of this guard's lifeline? Like, I'm pretty sure, I mean, I could assume that the guard is, yeah, ceased to be, but it's like, we don't know. They just kind of cut away and then it goes straight back to the hotel. But that was the thing, was like, in one scene, Pennywise shows up in the moon as, I guess, a vision or just because he's fucking on the moon. And then in the next, he is a physical, like, person there, like, trying to get Henry up and out of bed, ready to go. Now, that kind of, it keeps playing back where it's like, you don't really know what, it's like, is Pennywise actually there or is he just projecting? And it just kind of keeps going on and on and on. And on top of that, it's like, because they're in Derry, it's like, does he just have that ability to project from wherever he is and know what that, you know, what the person's doing? Because one of the great little scenes is when the group all, they finally all come together. Everyone comes across town. They're hitting their old stomping grounds. Like Ben, he ends up going down to the Barrens, and he actually sees a chubby kid being chased by three other boys, and it automatically, he has these like flashbacks of what, you know, Henry Bowers used to do to him, and the kids end up pushing this, you know, chubby kid down. He scrapes his knee, and then Ben walks over to him and he helps him out. He ties a handkerchief around his leg, kind of to help the kid out, and he tells the kid, he's like, hey man, you're gonna be okay, just, you know, keep your head up and things like that. So he was just trying to be really nice to me as a, you know, for a stranger type of thing, which is really, really cool. But then he ends up getting this another quick flash of his past where the voice of his father rings in his ears, you know, calling out, hey Ben, hey Ben. And then he rushes over to the edge of the lake and he sees the sewer. And then he ends up seeing the image of the skeleton standing in that spot where his father was waving at him. And that's it. That's all he gets. And I think Ben kind of got off a little easy on his memories, I should say. Beverly's was really cool just because she went back to her home and she hasn't been there in years. And so she decided that she was going to see if she can go see her father. Just wanted to, you know, kind of run through old memories and all that good stuff. And she looks at the doorbell and says, Marsh. She rings it. And then out of nowhere, this little old lady opens the window and she's very puzzled and she's like, you know, can I help you? Like, what are you doing? And Beverly's kind of surprised because she's like, oh, well, like, I was wondering if you guys, you know, if the Marshes lived here. And she's like, no. She's like, oh, do you mean like Alvin Marsh? And she's like, oh, like, she's like, yeah, I'm Beverly Marsh. I'm his daughter. And she's like, oh, well, I'm really sorry, dear. I'm sorry to be the one to tell you this, but he died like 5 years ago. And so Beverly looks back at the tag on the door, and it says Kirsch now. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I thought it said Marsh, and I didn't know. And so Mrs. Kirsch was like, oh, you know, don't worry about it. You know, please come on in and, you know, just sit down, have some tea. And, you know, just, like, please, like, relive your past, whatever. So Beverly comes in. She sits down. And Mrs. Kirsch is starting to make her some tea. And she's just like, yeah, like, oh, like, you, the house looks amazing. You've done such a great job with it. It looks so comfortable. And, you know, it's just, it's so much different than when I used to live here. And Mrs. Kirsch is like, oh, yeah, this has been very, very nice. And as Mrs. Kirsch is, like, drinking, it is very, like, sloppy and Neanderthal-like. It doesn't really fit for, like, how nice this old lady is. So she drinks her tea, and then she's like, oh, go ahead and drink your tea, dear. And it's a close-up of this woman's face, and you can see her teeth is just rotten and just it's very, very gross and just, like, it makes you cringe. It makes you want to grab a toothbrush and just instantly start brushing your teeth. So Beverly kind of was like, that doesn't really, like, she kind of feels unsettled by it, and then she goes to, like, look at, like, she goes to drink her tea. She's, like, stirring it, and she looks down, and it's blood. And so she throws the cup, and it goes all over the carpet, and Mrs. Kirsch is like, oh, don't worry about it, dear. I'll get it. And she bends down to start scrubbing, and then she's like, oh, like, you should have left whenever you had the chance, Beverly. And out of nowhere, like, you hear Mrs. Kirsch's voice changed to a man, and then the head looks up, and it's her dead father's face in a woman's body. It almost reminded me of, like, if it was, like, in Psycho with his mom before, like, she actually turned into a skeleton. Like, that's kind of what I got out of it, was from what they did for this for Beverly Marsh's dad type of thing, you know, being a zombie woman, I guess, or just in woman's clothes. But yeah, it freaks her out, and she rushes out the door, but then instantly turns around and sees Pennywise just sitting there, like, he beeps his nose, like, beep beep. He's like, he just starts laughing, and then he just opens the door and shuts it and leaves. Beverly is freaking out, and all of a sudden she doesn't realize that she's in the middle of the road, and a big ass truck is barreling down on her, and it almost hits her, and she just passes her right by. But as it passes, she looks back at the house, and it's completely boarded up. Like, it is so dilapidated that it's just like there's no way that anybody could be living in it. So she is just, She doesn't know what to feel, like, which is really, really, like, that scene is just so damn good. And in the remake, I will say, it is one of my favorite scenes, because that Mrs. Kirsch scene creeped me out so goddamn bad. Like, it's actually kind of hard for me to watch, just because there's that one little scene where she's like, oh, let me go get some, like, tea or something for you. And you could see, like, Beverly is up close, and then, like, they have the shot in the back. She's, like, scuttling across the back of it completely naked. It is fucking terrifying. It is so good. But yeah, so that one was really, really fun. Now, as for Eddie, when he shows back up to Derry, he ends up running out of his inhaler, and he ends up stopping off at the local drugstore. The funny thing is that the drugstore really didn't change much. You could tell, like, it's just super old. The sign isn't really there anymore. Like, it's just, you could tell, like, maybe there was, like, a Walgreens or something like that that may have been, like, down the road. It's just, like, this just happens to be here, and because they've been there so long, they just ain't going anywhere type of thing. But it's more of just a staple in the town. So Eddie walks in and he instantly has this memory of standing there with the store clerk, and the clerk is trying to explain to him, like, hey, you know, your mom and your doctors are trying to tell you that you're sick and you're not, and you're caught in the middle of it, and he's trying to help this kid out. He's trying to explain to him that you don't need this stupid inhaler. It's made up of just water and chemicals, and it's made to make you feel like you are getting air, or it's helping out with your lungs and whatnot. When there's really nothing wrong with this kid. He just panics and freaks out and has anxieties, but I think it's more because of what his mom puts him through. They do a pretty good job in part one setting up the whole thing of the mom being very controlling, or just overpowering and manipulating of Eddie. There's that the moment where like the seven show back up and Eddie's like, hey, these are my friends and things like that. And she's like, no, like your mother's your friend. You don't need any other friends. Like, you just need me. And I'm assuming that maybe that because of Eddie's father passing away, the mom can't deal with another loss and she doesn't want her little boy to leave her. And then like later when he becomes an older man, he ends up having a really, really good and stable career, but he's living with his mother. She's always there. And even like when he's leaving back to Derry, she doesn't understand why he's leaving her. And she is just, it's just the absolute worst kind of person, because she is just manipulating because she doesn't want to be left alone. In the remake for the part one, they took it from where she was very, I guess, like she had money. She had, or like a set of class. For the remake, they actually made her more of just that. I would call it just like a hillbilly way, or just a hillbilly kind of status, or just very, more poor. She was a lot fatter. She was a lot, like, the only way I could think about it, like, I kind of relate it back to is Honey Boo Boo's mom. That's just where that's the only image that kind of pops into my brain right at the moment. But she was still also very manipulative. She was telling Eddie that he was sick and he just couldn't, you know, like, and it was the same premise, but it was more of it was more angry. It was more aggressive than what they did in the 90s TV series. But so the pharmacist is trying to tell Eddie as a kid, hey, this is a placebo. It's all bullshit. And you're ruining yourself. You're making yourself crazy. Well, older Eddie goes into the pharmacy and he goes to get his prescription refilled. And there's a young man with glasses that's behind the counter, helps him out. And then out of nowhere, he hears a voice from the back. And it's the old pharmacist from when he was a child. And so Eddie, he gets really excited. He's like, oh my God, like, I can't believe it's him. So he walks over to him and he's trying to, like, the guy, you could just tell, like, I mean, is just so old and decrepit, and just like, I'm assuming that there's Alzheimer's behind him, and he keeps focusing on a few different phrases and he repeats them. One of his things is, and the young man that was helping Eddie out behind the counter was his grandson. And so he's calling out to his grandson. He's like, can I have a cigar there, sonny? Cigars are always my favorite. I love to smoke cigars. And he kind of keeps going on to that. And then his grandson's like, no, grandfather, and not getting you a cigar. Like, I don't have any. It's, it is what it is. Well, then, like I said, Eddie goes up and says, like, I'm Eddie Kashbarak. Like, I don't know if you remember me. Like, you try to, tell me the truth. It's like, I just can never get away from these things. Like, I'm really sorry, but I'm really happy that, you try to, help me. And the old man, he's like, oh, like, do you have a cigar? Like, no. He's like, oh, I love licorice. I've always been partial to licorice. But then he looks up at Eddie, and he's like, oh, you're looking a little bit peaked, sonny. He's like, it's just water. Just water and catheter. It's just like, and Eddie just kind of like is amazed. He's like, oh my God, yes. Like, you do remember me. Like, I can't believe it. And then he turns, like, as Eddie goes to stand up, this monster, like, hand reaches out and grabs his arm. It is the first time where we actually see Pennywise in his true form using that look. So that also goes to tell me that old man that was sitting there, was that actually Pennywise pretending to be the old man, or was it just an imagery of something, or like that he was projecting into the old man? But it's like, but again, Eddie was physically grabbed. It wasn't an image. It wasn't a memory. He was physically grabbed by that gross spider monster arm thing. And then that was it. That was the first time. So we kind of got images from the first part of the film where we kind of get to see what Pennywise could possibly be with Henry Bowers and Stanley and the Deadlights and whatnot. But this, we actually get to see the true creature. It's just, is he actually there or is he not there? And the pharmacist looks up at Eddie and he's like, you better run, Eddie. Run while you still can. Get out of Derry. And then Eddie jerks his hand away. He doesn't react to the monster arm that grabs him. He's just reacting to the face and what the pharmacist is actually saying to him. And it freaks him out so bad that he actually just picks up and starts to walk away. And then the old man just goes right back into, I need a cigar. I love some licorice. I've always been partial to licorice. And then that's it. And it's a super trippy, but like I said, I don't understand if it is, again, if Pennywise is there or if he wasn't there and he's projecting. But later on, we end up coming across the group at the Chinese restaurant. And again, I am very weak-willed because I'm watching the scene going, God damn it, I really want some Chinese food. I have a problem with watching movies and instantly wanting whatever food is being shown on the screen. I got a problem here, and I need it fixed. So, as the group, starts to come in, contact with each other, they're all just amazed at how old, much older they are, but they instantly know exactly who they're looking at. I mean, Ben, even though like he's a lot thinner, super handsome, John Ritter, everyone calls him Haystack still, but they're amazed at just how good he looks. Same thing with Beverly. She's just absolutely gorgeous. Eddie, he just looks older, more just well-kept. And then you got, like, Richie. When he comes in, like, he sees Bill, Mike, Eddie, and Ben. They're all, hugging and hanging out and stuff like that. And Richie, he goes into this mode, he panics. He has, like, this high anxiety attack. And he has to, he stops himself from going into the main room. And he rushes into the bathroom and starts splashing water on his face. And he's like, he's like talking himself into it because he's starting to get sick. He just can't deal with the fact that like of what he saw earlier in the day that affected him so bad that he can't let the rest of the group know that he's weak. And I found that to be very, I could see myself in that at times, because it's like a lot of those people that will, they have that personality of being the life of the party or just being that guy that everyone gravitates towards where they know, oh, you're the class clown type of thing. A lot of times, like, they put on that mask where they don't know how to deal with whatever their inner emotions are. So they put on the clown and they perform. And it's just they cover that pain with a performance. And I will admit that I have done that many, many times in my life. Like, I've always been just the happy-go-lucky guy, and you know, it's like I have my struggles, and you know, I fight with depression too, and it's just like I know what that feels like to sit there and go, okay, I can't let people know that that there's something wrong. Like, I don't want, you know, people to worry about me, so I'm just gonna, you know, put on a happy face and kind of get through it, which really sucks. And you know, I've actually learned to, you know, try and talk to people about it, you know, here and there, and it's always good to just kind of get things off your chest and let people know. But with Richie, that was something where he didn't want his friends from the past seeing him like that. He wanted him to see the Richie. And so when he shows up, he's just automatically like, hey guys, he's got the swagger. He's just got that, you know, Richie vibe to it. And it's like, and everyone just comes in, beep, beep, Richie. And then it's like nothing ever changed. They're all just boom, good friends. And then Beverly shows up and then, you know, they're just all in love. Like, it's just absolutely fantastic. But they're all sitting there they're meeting around and everything like that. But then they all realize that there's only six of them there. And so they're looking around for Stan, and they're like, we think that Stan would show up like he said he would. And, you know, but lo and behold, they're like, okay, well, let's just go ahead and just start without him and, you know, move on. So they all kind of, they're chiming in on Mike, and they're like, hey, like, we don't know what's going on. Like, we don't remember very much of it. And it's like, we need you to tell us what's happening. And then Richie's like, come on guys, like, we just got here. Like, let's just actually just try and just have a good meal. Like, he just doesn't want to remember much, or he doesn't want to continue talking about something that's like really affecting him. So they all just sit there, and it is a really awesome dinner. Like, it looked like a really delicious dinner at that too. So they all have a really good dinner. They're all just cracking up. They're talking about their, you know, what they've been doing with their lives. And I guess like Richie he's been married like 4 or 5 times, but all of the other, the rest of the group have never been married. Well, except for Bill. Bill just like, I believe he just got married to Audra. They never actually say how long they were together. But clearly, like, she's named Dembro, so there you go. But none of them have kids, and they all have, like, these incredible, successful lives. And it turns out that the only person that hasn't was Mike. Mike stayed behind, and his life was just mid. It was just meh. Like, that's the best that it could really get for him. But he stayed behind because he felt like it was his duty to make sure that things were still gonna be okay. Like, to make sure that it was gone. And slowly, as they start to talk about it again, they realize that the images and the memories were starting to come back, and they were trying to figure out like what they were going to end up doing. So at the end of the night, they were, again, they were trying to decide on what they're doing. Richie's being a bitch and, you know, he's trying to weasel his way out of it, saying like, oh, I got a flight at 6 a.m. I'm on the, you know, it was great seeing you guys, but I gotta catch the flight. Like he's trying to, you know, put his tail between his legs and run away. And the rest of the group is trying to get him to basically stay. And he's like, you know what? Like, let's just leave it at a nice memory and just have these, you know, our fortune cookies and just be on our way. So the group opened up their fortune cookies, and it's that, just that iconic scene where each cookie opens up to a different horror. One of them opens up to an eyeball that's like looking around. Another one is a spider. Another one I thought at one point was just a crab or like a scorpion, but it literally looks like it's like two claws that are coming. It's like going back together. And I thought like after watching this last time that maybe it was a mouth of some sort, but it really is just claws that are opening and closing on each other. And so it's just a lot of just creepy things that are there to fuck with the group. And the crazy thing about this is we don't get any type of Pennywise-esque thing. There's no balloon. There's no voice that, you know, shows up and says, you know, you gotta leave or any of that. Like his head doesn't show up in you know, a roasted pig or, you know, who knows? Like there's nothing. It's just fortune cookies that freak them out and that's it. One of my favorite things though, out of that whole thing, I completely forgot that she's in this, but the little lady that is hosting the group over at the Chinese restaurant, when she came into the scene, I had this moment of just pure joy, because the last time that I saw that woman, it was in Happy Gilmore. She is the Chinese lady so when Happy is is breaking up with his girl, he starts singing that song. It's like, I want to kiss you all over and over and again. That little Chinese lady is the one he's singing to. She comes up and then he spends the night with her. And then as he gets the call from, Happy, when he gets the call from his grandmother about the house, he rushes out and she comes around the corner in his hockey jersey, just like, oh, you want no breakfast? And then like, that's it. That's the last time I've ever seen this woman. And I was just dying laughing because that's all I could think about was her in this freaking hockey jersey with a pan full of eggs. I was like, it was just so fucking hilarious. So the group get freaked out by these fortune cookies and they bounce off over to Mike's, for the library. And then this is where Mike again tries to, I guess, drip feed them information on what they're dealing with. One awesome thing too is that all the balloons that were popping and the blood splatters that were going off when Richie was there, you could still see all of the splatters everywhere. So as the group is walking in, they could still see everything and it's vibrant. Like it's just, it's all there. It's not going away. And the thing that was like that kind of helped progress this thing along even more was when they find out that Stan has killed himself. So Mike calls and he's trying to get in touch with Stan because Stan's supposed to be here and no Stan. Well, Richie's doing his thing, and he's, you know, cracking, you know, just bad jokes. Like, they're not even that funny. And making the whole group just smile and giggle. And then all of a sudden, Mike gets back on the phone, and he's getting the information that Stan has slit his wrist in the bathtub. And it was right after Mike called. Well, after that, they all get really upset, and they're trying to decide on what to do. And so Mike then opens up the little refrigerator, and a, you know, just a sea of balloons just pour out. But then it's just Stanley's head in the fridge, and it starts to just crack jokes like if it was like fucking like Rodney Dangerfield. And he's just like, he's just going to town on everybody. He's just like one of my favorites is when he talks about Eddie. He's like, "Hi, Eddie, how's your sex life? What's your sex life? Do you have a sex life?" And it was like, and it kind of comes to it a little bit later on in a weird way. But it's just like he's just roasting every one of them. And then he actually talks about how, you know, you guys will, you know, are going to do great down here. It's like, you guys are all going to float. We all float. And then, like, the head in the fridge just start to, like, get nasty. He's like, "We're all float down here." He starts screaming. And then Mike slams the door. And then that's it. And a little part of me kind of wishes that just before they all left the library, that they opened up the fridge again to show it empty. Kind of put that like nail, like, okay, that was all in their head type of thing. That would have been really, really cool just to see. It's like a quick little, like, maybe like Richie or somebody like peeking in just to double check type of thing. After everything starts going nuts, they start, everything's like freaking out. The lights are going out. The windows are shattering. And then the rest of the group is like, okay, I'm okay. Or Richie's like, he's the one that kind of instigates. He's like, "All right, I don't mind talking about this, but for the love of God, I don't want to do it here. Can we please just go anywhere but here?" And it's because, like, everything has been happening to him at the library, and he can't stand it anymore. So they go back to the hotel, and Mike, he's got, like, a box of helmets and flashlights and just kind of, like, hiking gear and things like that, you know, stuff that they would need if they were going to go back down into the sewer. And Richie is just, like, not having it. He's just like, "I can't, we're not young kids anymore. Like, I'm ready to go back home. Like, I don't want to do this." And a few of them feel that way too, but then they just have this, like, this feeling that it's like they can't leave. There's no way that they can. They have to see it through and make sure that this thing is completely dead. So they finally, as they're going through it, Mike is actually handing them old newspapers, and this is where I think the bulk of them actually, like, really come into terms of what they're dealing with and just all the history that's behind it. They're getting the full story of it now. And just a little bit later, they all, Beverly mentions that, you know, she's really, you know, cold. There's a shawl up in her room. So Ben offers to go get it. Mike has to go grab something. And then Eddie also has to go get his refill for his inhaler. So all three of them go up to the rooms and they say, "Okay, we're going to meet right back here. Like, go grab your stuff. Come back. That's it." And Eddie walks into his room. And he ends up grabbing his inhaler, no problems. And then Mike goes into his room. He walks in and goes and grabs, like, some of his, like, little books and like papers. And then, like, I think it was like a few clothes or something like that. But like he stops in the middle of grabbing his of the things that he needed, and he notices that his window is open. He walks over and shuts it, and as he's walking back, out of nowhere, Henry Bowers comes barreling through and raises up his knife and goes to stab him. But then he like gets him around the neck and like he's like kind of like got him like in this like half Nelson like chokehold thing and drops the N-word. And a little part of me is like, back in 1990, it's like this was on TV and he's dropping the N-word like it's nothing. That would not fly today at all. I don't even know why it flew back, you know, back in 1990. But it's just like, holy shit. That was like, it's free flowing on that. It ain't good. But it just shows that because Mike wouldn't have known exactly who was grabbing him until he heard those words. But Mike ends up getting stabbed in, it was the side, and I guess it just missed like a bunch of like fatal organs and stuff like that. So he got really lucky, but he gets stabbed, and as he's going down, that's when Ben and Eddie break in, and they are, you know, trying to help, get Henry off. And as they're getting him off, he ends up pulling the knife out, and then the knife gets turned around, and Henry falls right on the knife into his heart and just kills him almost instantly. And the rest of the other guys are like, holy crap, like it's Henry Bowers. Like how in the world did he, you know, show up here? Like why? And there's so many questions going around it, and they have no answers whatsoever. But they all freak out, and they have to get Mike to the hospital. So they all pile into Richie's convertible. I'm talking like pile in. They are getting very, very tight. It's like sardines in there. But they get Mike to the hospital, and he ends up being okay, but he's like in critical condition. So that is one of the losers that is not going to be joining them down in the sewer. Now, to back it up, back at the hotel, so as Henry Bowers was stabbing Mike, Ben was in Beverly's room getting her shawl. Well, so Ben goes to her bed, gets her shawl, and he sniffs it. And he sees, I think it's like one of her perfume bottles or something like that. And he takes a sniff of that. And I don't feel like it's like in a creepy way. He's going through her underwear drawer. It's like Ben is just absolutely in love with Beverly. So it's like he is, I don't know. It's like I didn't see it as like in a creepy way or whatnot. But then out of nowhere, Beverly just walks right in. And she's like, oh, like, I'm glad that we've had this time. I'm glad we were able to connect again. Like, I can't believe what's going on. And I've always just wanted to ask you this, but she ends up asking him if, he wrote the poem, and he said, yes. And she's like, I always knew it was you. Then they start like making out, and Ben is just like finally, yes, like this is it's happening, like it's going down. But then he looks into the mirror, and he looks down, and he sees like the back of Beverly's head, but then looks down at her feet, and she's wearing a clown suit. And then he backs away. Oh, and he also sees that he's got some like white grease paint on his face, and he backs away, and you just see Pennywise there. He's like, kiss me, fat boy. It's just so fucking good. But it's just having Ben freak out like that and then rush out the door. And then that's when he ends up, they go into, you know, deal with like Henry Bowers and Mike. It was just Ben having to deal with that and then deal with Henry Bowers and Mike and then turn around when they're actually at the hospital. Ben is downstairs and they're kind of waiting on, you know, seeing like what is going to happen with Mike and if he's going to be okay. And Beverly's down there as well. And she starts like freaking out. She's like, oh, if Mike dies, then we're only going to have, you know, the five of us. And I don't know if we could deal with it. And she just like, she starts to lose it. So Ben comforts her and he's holding her. And they start, you know, like just hugging and everything else. And he's just trying to calm her down. And he, like Ben starts to talk to her to, you know, help her out. And she's like, oh my God, like you just have this, you have the way, the words of a poet. And then it hit her that's where the poem came from. Like it was Ben, it was always Ben. And so she recites the poem back to him and Ben freaks out like instantly because it's the same conversation that he had with technically Pennywise in her room. And he's just like, wait, are you the clown or are you actually Beverly? Like, and he just starts like losing it. And she's like, nope, it's me. Like it's, you know, don't worry about it. And then they start to like kiss and make out. And it's like, just the love is just boom, like right there. And then Eddie comes around the corner and he's just like, hey, yeah, come on guys. And, you know, completely, you know, blocks them type of thing. And they go up and they find out that Mike is okay. Well, it also turned out that, so only one person could go see Mike, in the hospital room. So Bill was the one chosen. So Bill walks in and Mike ends up telling him like, a little bit more about, you know, what they need to do and what have you. And as he's doing that, he says, go into my front left pocket of my jacket. So Bill walks over to the closet, opens it up, grabs, you know, what was in the front pocket. And it turns out that it's the two silver, like, they weren't like coins, but they're like silver rocks. And they were the ones that were used when they attacked Pennywise the first time when they were children with the slingshot. And Bill is like amazed. He's like, why do you have this? Like, this was back down in the sewer, like after we shot the clown. And Mike says, like, I went back down. He's like, I was struggling really bad with depression. I wanted to commit suicide, you know, a number of times. My life wasn't going anywhere. And I decided to go back down into the sewer. And a little part of me was hoping that the clown was going to be there and that I would basically just end at that point, which is really, really sad. But as he went down there, he ended up finding one of the silver pieces that was on the ground. And then he ended up seeing another one that was lodged into a wall where, you know, Pennywise was after he was hit. And so he dug him out and then, you know, and kept him. So he gave him a bill and said, go fight and, you know, I'll be there. And so Bill had made them, you know, like as he's explaining it to the rest of the group, and they're also amazed too that he even has the silver pieces, but they're just saying that, okay, one of these silver pieces is Stanley, the other one is Mike. And that way we have all seven of us together. And it's just really funny because you could see this dynamic of like what they were like as kids, but as these adults, where they're just like, yeah, we're going to do this. But then Richie comes in, like, he's like, come on, guys. Like, what's up? Like, we can't keep up with this bullshit charade. Like, we're not kids. Like, I'm not going on this adventure. Like, I wasn't planning on doing any of this shit, and yet I am. And then he basically was like, okay, well, I guess I'm doing this. And then they end up going down into the sewer. As they go down, they are met with a ghost from Bill's past. So as they get to the center of this little, I guess, the sewer, like, tunnel, they are met with a paper boat. And it's the iconic boat that we all know and love. And it's just flowing right on down to Bill. And then as Bill picks it up, he looks over and he sees the image of Georgie. It's just standing there. And Georgie is blaming Bill. He's like, you're the one that sent me down there to, you know, to be killed by the clown. Like, it's your fault, Bill. And he's just giving Bill the tongue lashing and just guilt trip from hell, basically. And Bill is just like, no, like, it wasn't me. Like, I'm sorry. Like, don't be mad. And the rest of the group, they can also see Georgie. And they're like, that's not him. It's not real. Don't feed into it. And then Bill finally, like, kind of was like, okay, it's not real. And then it just moves on. And they are trying to find out where to go next. And so Bill has the idea, well, let's see if, you know, where this, it's like water should flow a certain way. So let's see where this goes. So he takes the boat because the boat is real. And that's the thing, is like, it's not in his imagination. It's like he's physically holding it. So he puts the boat back down and then pushes it forward. And it starts to go down this, back down this water path. And so the group follow it the whole way. And as they go down, they come across this little tiny door, like this, like for gnomes or something. It's this little fucking door. And it's got like human like skulls and things like that. It almost looks like something like the Crypt Keeper would have. Like, it's just like, it was a little absurd. But they find this little door, and then they go through it, and it enters this giant cave. Well, as they go through the cave, Bill looks up, and he ends up seeing Audrey. Now, Audrey, earlier in the film, she is very worried about Bill. So she is talking with her producer, who is also trying to break Bill and her up so that he can kind of sweep into those DMs. And he's trying to tell her, like, oh, I hated your husband, like, he was a horrible writer, yada yada, horrible to work with, but you're great. You're a great actress. And so she's like, well, you know, what should I do? And he's like, oh, well, you know, you could always take this time to kind of work on yourself and make sure you're on up and up. And she's like, well, what if you just gave me a couple of days? And he's like, well, I'm just going to pretend like I didn't hear you say those words, and, you know, that you want to ruin your career by leaving. So it's like, you know, just take some time, and I'll see you in the morning. And he's like, oh, and don't think about leaving. Well, almost like instantly, she ends up thinking about leaving. So it's like, so after the producer leaves, like, she ends up calling and booking a flight to America, you know, to Derry. And a little, like, as she's driving through, about halfway through the second part here, she stops at a gas station because she's asking for directions to Derry. She's wanting to make sure she's on the right path. And the gas station attendant, he is like, oh, yeah, Derry's, you know, just down that way there. And then he looks at her, he's like, so, Audrey, like, Like, or like how far, like, you know, you ever, I forget what he asked. It's like some, like, yes, some about Derrier, like she, he's ever been there. And she kind of like looks over at him and like, how did you know my name type of look. And then out of nowhere, he's like, it's like, oh, they all float. It's like, he's like, you'll love it down here. And it becomes Pennywise's voice. And then the gas station attendant flips and it turns into, like, turns into Pennywise, and the deadlights in the eyes, like, just start to hypnotize, and just the whole, like, you'll float, and it's like just kind of just giving her that, just the business, like, it's just so good. But he hypnotizes her, and then you can see this bright flash, and then it cuts to the next scene. Well, it turns out that Pennywise used his deadlights to basically paralyze her, and then he put her into this like spider web that's just hanging in his cave, like some type of like demented piece of like decoration. So Bill sees her, and then he instantly wants to, like, he rushes to go and get her out. But as he's doing that, this big ass fucking spider comes creeping over the edge, and it's just like, it's one of those things where, as a viewer, you instantly have this thing of, what the fuck is that thing? We have been dealing with this goddamn clown for the past, like, 2 hours. Almost 3 hours. And out of nowhere, this big-ass fucking spider comes creeping in. So, lo and behold, this is what Pennywise's true form, quote-unquote, you know, finger wiggles, should end up being. We don't know if this is his exact form or if he's using this to actually freak the kid, you know, the group out. We don't know. But lo and behold, from what the 90s version of it, this is supposed to be his final form, and or his true form, I should say. And the group is trying to fight him as they can. As they're going through, they do this really dumb little gimmick thing. Bill goes to fight Pennywise, and he's like throwing stuff at him. He's trying to smack him, I believe, with like a stick or a bone or something. And as he goes up to him to smack him one time, Pennywise lifts up, and the bottom of his stomach is where the deadlights are. Like, it just, it projects out in this, this extremely bright white light. Well, it automatically locks Bill, and he just, he's hypnotized, and he's just staring into it. And then Eddie, oh no, it wasn't Eddie, it was Ben. Ben rushes over to try and get him away from it, and instantly also looks up, boom, gets locked into it. So both Ben and Bill are staring, like, you know, goons, into this white light. And then Richie rushes over, like, hey guys, like, we gotta get out of here, like, and then boom, grabs the two of them and looks up. Oh, and now he's stuck in the light too. And I'm like, you can see what your friends are doing, and the fact that, oh, they're staring into this light, why wouldn't you decide, like, oh, I probably shouldn't look at this thing? So they're all locked in on this light, and then out of nowhere, here comes Eddie. Eddie, he ends up having a flashback to when he was a kid and the first time that they fought the clown, and he does that whole thing of like, oh, this is battery acid, you swine, and then sprays the clown with it. Oh, and then also on the top of Eddie, we also have this very awkward and kind of out of place conversation before the group goes through the little door. He goes and tells the group that, oh, you know, while we were at the Chinese restaurant, I told you guys that I was seeing somebody. He's like, I'm not. I've never seen anybody. I've never loved anybody except for you guys. So I can never be with somebody, and I've never had the chance. So he's like, so Richie's like, so you're telling us you're a virgin? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, and they're all like, cool. Great story. And then that's it. There's nothing else. It means absolutely nothing to the story at that point. And it's just more of just Eddie just trying to, like, unload before they go in. Like, it's kind of like last rites type of thing. Like, I just want you guys to know this before, you know, I die or something like that. But it's just such a weird and out of place little comment where it's like, that probably could have came, like, earlier on in the film and it would have been just fine. But just before their battle scene, he drops that information and they just no sell it. They're like, cool, you're a virgin. Whoopee. Like, it, okay, cool. And then they just move on. But back to the fight scene. So as Ben, Bill, and Richie are staring like goons into this light, Eddie has this flashback of him as a kid, runs over, and so he tries to do the same thing with his inhaler. So he rushes over, he's like, I'm not afraid of you. This is battery acid. I've defeated you once. And like he goes to spray Pennywise, and Pennywise isn't having any of that shit anymore. Like, he is not having it, so he grabs, like, the big-ass spider grabs Eddie, picks him up, and it crushes him. And I couldn't remember if the spider actually, like, stabbed him, like, with, like, as he was, like, picking him up or anything like that with the weird spider claw things, or not. But it's like, I'm assuming that it just crushed him. And then as he's doing that, Beverly decides that she's going to try and take a couple of crack shots. Well, the first shot that she takes, I believe it goes and it cracks off the spider's head. And it does absolutely nothing. It just banks off like it's metal. Like, it, there's nothing penetrating that hard skin. Which, if you go back to part one where they hit Pennywise and he just kind of cracks open and you can see the deadlights and going through, it's just, it's interesting to see how now that the spider is the true form, that he can't be hurt. And then her second shot ends up, she sees the deadlights and she ends up taking a shot at the spider's stomach where the light is. Hits it directly, and then it's like this big internal explosion. The lights go out, and I still was a little confused as to, well, like, it wasn't that bad of a shot to where it's like, how would that penetrate so much on a spider that's so thick? Like, that must have been like the softest spot of the spider. And then on top of that, it destroyed the lights and it basically almost killed the spider. It made Pennywise like scurry off at, like, in a kind of like an injured limp away. But then it stopped the deadlights. Bill, Ben, and Richie were able to kind of come back out of it, and they're like, okay, we got to stop this. We can't let this thing continue coming on. And Richie's like, I don't want this thing coming back to me when I'm 70. It's like, I'm pretty sure you guys wouldn't give two shits anymore if it came back when you're 70. So they all rush out over the little ledge, and they find the spider, and they tear that fucking thing apart. Like, I mean, it is brutal. Like, I kind of, it reminded me of something like from like a, like George Romero zombie scene, like whenever the zombies actually end up getting a human and they actually show the body being torn apart. Like, that's what they're doing to the spider. I mean, they're ripping off legs. They tear its heart out. I mean, Bill, I think at one point, like, you could just see the crazed psycho look in his face, and he's like, he goes in and grabs the spider's heart, and he's like, he rips it out, and he even holds it up. It looked like something out of like fucking Mortal Kombat. Like, it was just like, I was waiting for the fatality and like the toasty to come in, but it was just like, they're holding up the heart, like I said, ripping off legs, and you can hear the spider just screeching and just dying instantly, type of thing. And I don't know if that was more satisfying or not compared to what they did with the remake. Because, I mean, if you really think about it, Pennywise is supposed to be a god of sorts. He was an old ancient creature that has been, around for centuries. And for these mortals to go and, yeah, they shoot him in the lights, which I was like, that was a dick shot. But they shoot him in the lights, and then out of nowhere, these mortals are able to just tear him apart. And that's it. They win because they were able to physically tear this creature apart that's been around for centuries. And I kind of felt like that was a little, I don't know if it was far-fetched or if like or how I really liked that. I mean, when you compare it to the remake, they talked bad to stop him. Like they basically just told him that they weren't afraid of him, and they made him feel bad essentially, and then he like melted into the ground, and it was because he didn't have the fear over these people anymore. Like, it deflated him, and I was like, I don't know how I like if I like that one either. I mean, it's like, oh, like we're gonna say bad words to you and it's gonna stop you, or it's like, yeah, we're gonna literally tear you apart. I don't really know what the best way to actually stop an intergalactic, ancient being would be in that case. That has also got supernatural powers along with that. I don't know. It was very very puzzling. But lo and behold, it was stopped. Everyone, made it out, except for Eddie. Eddie died. But it was very, very sweet. Because Richie and Eddie were so close, Richie was the, one of the ones to, was like, had the like little last conversation with Eddie before he died. He was saying, oh, Eddie, he's like, Eddie Spaghetti, don't, you'll be okay. Don't worry about it. And then Eddie just kind of looks up at him and it's like, oh, he's like, Richie, I told you, don't call me Eddie Spaghetti. I hate that. And then he ends up dying. So it's pretty crushing on that end. But Richie ended up kind of continuing on with his comedy career. He decided that he was gonna do like a duo comedy movie, and the character that he had the other guy playing, like, so you had Richie doing his Richie thing, but then the straight man was very much like Eddie Kasprak. And it was, I guess, in honor of him, of his friend and things like that. So that was really, really sweet. Ben and Beverly ended up getting together. And then they said it was like a month later, they ended up getting married. And then it was like a month after that, they ended up having kids. Like, so they ended up breaking the curse of the children thing. So it's like after you know, Pennywise was slayed, that's when everything kind of, they were able to leave Derry, and then everything started to kind of go in their favor. But the fact that now both of them are happily married, and then now are going to have a kid together is just incredible. And then Mike, he even, and we're all getting this through Mike as well, too. Like, he's another anchor information point. So he's writing in a journal about everything. He's talking about Richie, Ben, Beverly. And then he even says, like, oh, you know, now that, you know, there's nothing really here for me, he's like, I might go ahead and leave myself and see what's out there. And, you know, saying that, it's like, oh, you know what, like, I've done my duty, and now I need to go and actually live my life a little bit, which is really, really good. And then he shows what Bill was doing with Audra, and Audra was still in her comatose state, and she was sitting in this room, and they were about to leave, going back, just heading back home out of Derry. And as they were about, like, being packed into the cab, Bill decides that, like, he's gonna, like, he looks over and he sees his bicycle, silver. And he decides that he's gonna put Audrey on this bike and he's just gonna take her for a ride. And they do this, like, really funny shot of the cab driver. Like, he doesn't know what's going on. He's like, oh, like, it's just such a slapstick, like, oh, what are you doing? No, don't understand. And Bill, he tells Audra that he's like, you know, I saved Stanley on this bike once. We ran away from evil. It was like we were running away from the devil, and it's like we rode as fast as we could. And so he's trying to get Audrey to come out of it, and as they're, like, he's riding faster and faster down this hill, she actually comes to, and she comes out of this trance, essentially, and she's just like, well, what are we doing? And she's, like, starting to freak out, and then, like, they're, like, dodging traffic and everything else, and then finally they get down to the bottom of the hill, and they end up stopping in the middle of traffic, and there's cars blowing and, you know, honking and going nuts, and she's freaking out. Bill's, like, super happy. They start kissing and having just a good old time. But, yeah, it turns out, like, so everything is, like, super happy, and it worked out on everybody's, you know, level. Audrey's okay, Mike's okay, Richie's okay, Ben and Beverly are definitely okay. So, I mean, it's a great little ending. And then the film actually ends with Tim Curry's laugh, and it is just, it's just awesome. So, this one, I would have to say, was, because of those points that I made where it's like you couldn't tell whether or not, you know, Pennywise was there or he wasn't, if it was projection, it was like, it was a little jarring, but at the same time, it was still enjoyable because of what was actually happening. The thing that was, like I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, that was interesting for me was the dynamic of Pennywise. Because in the second part, he's not just after the kids and being just an absolute monster. He's actually running scared. He's still being Pennywise. He's still doing the Pennywise things, but he is doing it so that they go away. He doesn't want to have the fight, and he doesn't want, because they know, and they've already, you know, quote unquote, stopped him or stalled him, I guess, once before. He doesn't want to go through that, but he's trying to put up that front of this like, oh, like, I'm a big bad thing, you shouldn't be here, go away. And that dynamic of a character, to me, kind of hurts in a way, because you want your bad guy or your monster to be the monster. You don't want them to show the chip in the armor. I mean, when you have characters like I brought up, Freddy Krueger before, it's the same thing. It's like you don't want to see your bad guys get beat up, and yet in every goddamn movie, Freddy Krueger's getting his ass handed to him. And a lot of times, like, you're just sitting there just going, like, no, I just want you to be the fucking crazy ass burned up dude with a fucking gloved hand with all the knives terrorizing the kids. But yet there we are. And with Pennywise, him having to go to Henry Bowers, saying that, I'm not strong. Like, he actually says, I'm not strong enough yet to handle them on my own. And so he needs them to go and deal with, deal with the group and go murdering again. And that, like, I couldn't tell whether or not it's like, if maybe Pennywise just really wasn't strong enough, but he could still be effective on, by projecting those images and whatnot. But that was something where it's like, well, how many kids did he actually have to eat in order to be strong or to be at 100%. Like, it's never specified at all. And it's like, if anything, I would have just said when Pennywise just had a few, kids to snack on, that would have, been enough to top him off so that he could, kind of function type of thing. So, it's just to have your character like that just be so vulnerable, and even though he's supposed to be this godlike creature, but to still show just some little ounce of just fear in his own little way is just incredible. There's a lot that to go on. For me on the skull rating, I'm actually going to give this, after rewatching it, I'm probably just going to give this one a solid 4. I really did like this. I mean, when you really break it down to just having the adults go on, this adventure of their own, just going down memory lane. Again, it's one of those things where it's like, how many adults in this day and age will sit there and remember everything from their childhood? Or it's like this cloud just goes over and you're so stuck in the now that when things happen, come back to you from the past, it just hits you so hard. And for these adults to have to deal with this childhood trauma of just everything that they went through was just, I do really, really enjoy it. And from the first part of the film, I kind of felt like it's very like Stand By Me, and that's just kind of like, Stephen King's, deal, when you actually have that group of kids and they're, going up against something, bigger than they are. Honestly, I kind of felt the same way about the adults. Now, granted, I can definitely see where a lot of people will gravitate towards the first part of this more than the second, much like I just did, because I gave it a 5 for the first, 4 for the second. It's, for me, it was better when it was kids, because of that they're doing something bigger than them. And with the adults, it's like you don't have that much of a, I guess, like, sympathy towards them. But at the same time, the story was still solid. I mean, again, it by Stephen King is just an absolutely a phenomenal book. It is everything that you it's a well worth the read. Even though it's a big fucking book, it is well worth it. It's got so much stuff in it that they probably could not fit anywhere near this. And I've actually heard that, I guess HBO is going to be doing a Welcome to Derry TV series. So I don't know what, if they're just going to be doing all new original little shorts of people like throughout Derry that's dealing with Pennywise, which I cannot wait for. But it would be really cool to maybe get some of these little, you know, stories from some of the original, like, you know, from Ben Beverly and, you know, Bill and all those guys too. I thought that would be kind of neat. But I like seeing that the group is coming in and having to deal with this clown. It was a little off just having Pennywise feel afraid, and he was kind of trying to get the group away. So no. I need to eat. Like, go away. And so that was definitely something different compared to the first part. Now, another thing with the 90s version, where whenever Pennywise showed up, he never actually went through with what he was planning on doing. Like, he kind of just showed up, scared the shit out of the kids, and then just left them there. And in the remake, if Pennywise showed up and you were alone, you're pretty much fucked. Like, you were getting eaten. Like, you were going to die. Like, it was very rare, like, for him to, like, just let you go. Like, I think there was a couple times, like, there was one time with Mike. He was delivering the lamb to, like, one of the, like, the, like the, just one of the meat lockers in town. And that's when, you know, Pennywise is doing the whole lamb bit, and he's like in the locker, and then like the door shuts, and you can see all the hands coming out, and it's supposed to be like his burning family and stuff like that. And then so as Mike is about to get it from Pennywise, Henry Bowers drives up and, you know, starts, you know, screaming at him and stuff like that, tell him to get out of his town. But that saves Mike from Pennywise. So it's stuff like that. But in this, you know, the 90s series, it's like Pennywise will show up and then just leave. Like in the first part with like Eddie in the shower, he comes up through the shower. Eddie's in a corner. He can't go anywhere. But how does he get out? They never actually show, like, did Eddie scurry away or run away? Or like, how did Eddie leave? Because he was literally just in the corner freaking out and looking at this clown coming out of the sewer drain. It's like, I don't feel like Pennywise would have just left him there. I'm pretty sure Pennywise would have just gotten out of the drain and just gone over and gobbled him right up. But didn't happen. So, other than that, but that was the thing, is I still enjoyed it very, very much. I think it still holds up, you know, to this day. Maybe not as strong as part one, but in a whole, from front to back, I mean, I definitely give, like, from parts one and two, this thing is still a five. Like, it is still, like, I mean, if you sit there and ask, like, go up to anybody and say, all right, It, 1990, what do you think? And they're like, fucking awesome. And you know why? It's because Tim Curry's fucking awesome. That's why. It's end all be all Timmy boy. That is, again, one of my favorite clowns. He is so, so good. I absolutely love him so much. And it's just one of those things where he is, I think, where my, you know, the start of my love of clowns came from. So this is, again, one of my favorites. I gave the first part a 5. I gave the second part a 4. And we're giving the whole thing a solid 5. Ready to go. So, again, thanks, Paula, for, you know, giving up this suggestion and to get into all the little bits and details. You guys can always drop me a suggestion anytime you guys want. Throw me an email at creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com. Or hit me up on the Instagrams or the Facebooks at Creepin' It Real. and that's R-E-E-L. Yeah, and then also, just to give another plug, I got merch. Please head on over to our Instagram. In the bio, there is a link to our Redbubble page. You click that link, and that'll send you right on over, and you can pick out whatever the hell you want. I got a whole bunch of designs ready to go, and what's awesome is that you can put it on pretty much whatever you want. I mean, you got like cell phone cases, you got bath mats, you could put it on shower curtains, you can make t-shirts, you can do dresses, sweaters, hoodies. I mean, there's tons and tons of stuff. But also, I mean, if you like most of the stuff I have on there, it's like on like a black garment, but for some reason, you know, if you look better in red, put it on a red t-shirt. You can make that same design. Same thing with blue. I mean, and the quality from Redbubble is like, it's just awesome. Like, I mean, I've gotten tons of shirts from them. I actually have a couple of Creepin' Real shirts myself, and the quality, it holds up well, especially like through a bunch of washes and things like that. My cell phone cases, I also got from Redbubble. They hold up and they are awesome. Like I will never buy another cell phone case unless it's from Redbubble, mainly because I can put my own bullshit on there, which is fantastic. So you're helping me out, promoting the channel and all that good nonsense. But yep, I hope you guys definitely enjoyed this one this week, and I know I did. I can't wait for next week. So to all you slashers and survivor girls, we all float. We all float down here.